Hey everybody, what's going on? I am Rob Cesarino, and I am super excited about today's special podcast because we have such a great guest with us here to catch up. I'm so excited to welcome in a man that I've enjoyed following for many years on The Ringer. Of course, he's the co-host of the Binge Mode podcast, the Emmy Award-winning NBA desktop, and now he is taking his talents over to Crooked Media, has a new podcast called Take Line with Renee Montgomery coming up very soon. Please welcome the great Jason Concepcion. Jason, how are you?
I am so honored. This is a thrill. I'm not bullshitting right now. This is a thrill of a lifetime, Rob Cesarino.
Stop. Come on. Why?
For several reasons. First of all, I'm a huge Survivor fan. I think that you are one of those players who pushed the evolution of the game, understood you were on TV, knew how to use the confessionals, was thinking in a strategic way that I think was uncommon for the time.
And you know I'm not Boston Rob, right?
I am well aware of that. Two, you're from Long Island. I'm from Long Island. We're both from Nassau County. I love to see a Nassau County guy do something fun that isn't like, being a pipe fitter or something, something, you know, like working contracting or whatever. It's great to see people leave Long Island and do something fun. And so for that reason, I'm doubly excited. And then I'm triply excited because I'm in the middle of a Survivor rewatch right now.
Yeah.
I've been listening to your pod as I go. The latest Ghost Island episode was really fun.
Oh, wow.
One of the seasons my girlfriend and I just finished. We're currently on Kamaroan. We just did Cook Islands before that. And then before that was Ghost Island.
Yes.
And then before that was, unfortunately, Worlds Apart. But it's been the perfect thing for quarantine. And so it's just such a thrill to be here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have so much to say to all that. You know how I knew you were from Long Island? Well, aside from the fact that you're a Knicks fan, I knew that. But you know, sometimes people have like random sports fan teams. But I remember when the Bagel Boss guy happened.
Bagel Boss.
Yeah, you had tweeted like something. This is the most Long Island thing that ever happened. And I said, oh, I didn't know that Jason is from Long Island.
That's right. It's great to be with another Long Islander.
Yes. Okay. And what part of Long Island were you from?
I'm from Bethpage. It's technically and legally Bethpage, but culturally it's Levittown.
Okay.
Is what I like to tell people. If that makes sense. It'll make sense if you're from the area.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I have so many things to go through and talk about with you. By the way, congratulations on the move. The teaser for your new podcast, Take Line, has just dropped. Everybody, go check that out. Of course, I'm so in awe of you because I feel like that. Look, I know Survivor, okay, but I know one thing. I feel like you have like 30 things that you know everything about.
Well, everything is strong, but I have a lot of interests. You know, I was reading an interview with the late Larry King, where someone was asking him, but how have you managed to stay in the business that you're in, interviewing people for so long? And he said that he's just very curious about things. And that's the same with me. Mm-hmm. I'm just like really curious about stuff. Like when I get into something, whether it's Survivor or Big Brother or Below Deck or comic books or whatever, I just like have to know all the stuff about it.
Yeah.
That's just, and I'm not, I would never couch myself as an expert in any one thing, but I just love to learn about things. And that's, you know, it's like today, I feel like I'm going to be interviewing you more than you'll be interviewing me.
You can ask me whatever you want.
I want to dig Survivor goss and knowledge and production tidbits out of you.
Because I feel like that you are a Survivor fan, but I feel like you're not like in the weeds with us. So I'm really curious because I feel like you have such smart takes about all these different things. And I listened to all of Binge Mode, Game of Thrones. I went through like the whole ride. Really, you've all time great Peter Baelish, George R. R. Martin. It's incredible stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm really interested to get your thoughts on Survivor also, because I feel like that you come at like all these different things that are sort of like, you know, sort of things we don't think about like from a very from a very intellectual place. And I feel like you bring that right to a lot of things.
Well, I mean, that's part of what I enjoy about Survivor is, you know, of course, it's in the branding that it is this great social experiment. And it really is. I think going back over the past seasons has really been interesting because it is such a mirror of things that were culturally acceptable at the given time the show came out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like watching Hatch come back on Second Chances? You're going to know the
stuff. So he came back on the first All-Stars.
That's what it was. Like, it's the stuff that Hatch did on the first All-Stars he would have been thrown out immediately now. And then I think some of the discourse, like specifically like guys against women or any of those other kind of like topics where the cultural consciousness has evolved, to see it reflected contemporaneously with the times is really fascinating because it's like, okay, this is what was cool. This was what was okay back then. And I think the other thing is just like the evolution of Survivor as a game. One of the things that I love listening to your podcast for is this idea of metagame, mm-hmm. which I don't know if you know what metagame. Metagame is like this, it's like a video games criticism idea that in competitive games, when the rules change, your strategies change because of that. And it's like this kind of like a homeopathic idea of any change to a system within a game structure changes your overall strategy, you know, whether it's indoors, whether it's outdoors, whether it's a video game shooter where you're changing like the trigger sensitivity or that kind of thing. And the way you guys delve into, oh, this is why this person was presented this way. This person got a good edit. Here's why the producers obviously loved 18-year-old Michael from Ghost Island. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff is really interesting to me because it all adds to, one, the strategies of the moment, and it helps create the product that you end up seeing as Survivor.
So you were watching on television the whole way through and now are going back and rewatching random seasons?
I was watching on television from the beginning up to, I want to say, season Pearl Islands.
Okay.
Up to about Pearl Islands.
Yeah.
And then I was off and on, and then I came back hard with Millennials Gen X, and then have watched all the way through there, and then have been picking my way over the last 12 months.
The ones you missed.
Everything I missed, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Any highlights or questions that I could answer for you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I guess this is, I've heard various variations of this, but like, how do you, let's say you're going off idol hunting.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe you don't want people to know that you're idol hunting. How do you manage the cameras? How do you manage production in that moment where you're like, listen, I want to go get an idol, but I also don't want people to see this camera crew following me? That to me is an example of metagame.
Yeah.
Like a deeper strategy that does not get reflected in the actual product. So tell me how would that work if you're on the island?
So I think you just have to be smart about it, where I think that, you know, there's so many hours in the day where, you know, it's just the biggest thing about being on Survivor is that you're so bored. You know, it's like just going on and on all day long. And at some point, like, like people will go in the ocean, people will go like and go like disperse a little bit. Like when you are somebody, like you get there day one, it's like, all right, I got to go look for some firewood, everybody. Like everybody's right, like, that's sus, right? I think we've also seen like a little bit like in Tony in Winners at War is like figuring out like, hey, I got to go out and go look for idols at nighttime. Dom did that also in Ghost Island. And he's like, I would never do that. I would never start sticking my hand into like trees and holes in the middle of the night. Like, I don't want an idol that bad.
That's so interesting you say that, because one of the things I think I've noticed, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, as I've been rewatching these things, is the relationship to and the stigma from idol hunting.
Yeah.
It really has seemed as the game has gotten faster.
Yes.
Right? That it used to be that, oh, he's looking for an idol. We got to get that person out, he or she. And now it's like, yeah, I'm looking for an idol. What are you doing? I'm on Survivor. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Welcome to the game. That shift has been really fascinating to me. And then Tony is a great one. Tony used idols on his first winning season, I think, in a way that I had never really seen before, which is he brandished it. You know, he didn't. Usually it's like, keep it secret. I don't want it flushed. I'll have it here. And if I need to use it and I have catch a vibe, I'll pull it out. But Tony was like, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
I dare you to vote for me. And I thought he got some extra value out of that, out of the idol, because he did that, because he was so aggressively showing it off. Those kind of shifts in the game have been really, really fascinating to me. What was it like for you when you first got on the island? Like, what was the relationship to idols?
So that Jason, is very embarrassing that I actually played so long ago that
you're asking
somebody like that played like pre like a three point line of like you know, what was it like shooting threes? But in terms of, I do think it's interesting what you're saying about like that, how like punitive people are against people looking for idols. I do think has sort of like dwindled over the years, where I do think that we do see more of like everybody's just looking for the idol, as opposed to where it was like more like, oh, this one person is an outlier going out and looking for it. You know, I think that other than like these sort of like day one, day two people who go out and do it, like, I do think it's a little more accepted.
As far as you know,
yes.
Do people steal food? Where are they getting the food from? I feel like there's people that are more well fed than others, and so there's no explanation for it.
Stealing food from where? Like from like the production?
Yes.
No. So at least like, again, when I was there, the production, it's not like that they bring like a sack lunch and then they go and they do their like they do their shooting and then they go back and then they're like, you know, have like a craft service table that's like just off camera. So they have their own sort of like setup and camp where they're eating and drinking whatever. But I'm telling you that these people, and at least when I went through it, like these people, they're on this summer camp, and I'm telling you, some of these camera guys would get so hammered, like they go out like party all night, and they'd like hang out at the crew base. And then, like, sometimes these guys would show up at, like, 6 o'clock in the morning, and they just, like, reeked of, like, beer and, like, drink. Like, what are you guys doing? And your sense of smell is heightened.
Oh, it must be.
Yeah.
Because you're just so hungry all the time. That's another thing. So, it's all blending together at this point. But I think it's the season when Rupert came back.
Yes.
And not,
which one?
Not Heroes versus Villains. But the one where he ends up drinking like 9 beers.
Oh, yeah, that's All Stars. Yeah.
That's All Stars. I don't know. Like, obviously, like, listen, I'm not cut out for Survivor. I'll tell you right now. I would tap out. I would not be able to survive 3 days on the island.
You would never do it.
I would think about it. I would think heavily about it. But certain challenges I watch, I'm like, I would die. Anyway, I don't understand people who drink out there when they've been out there so long. They're so hungry. They're so thirsty. And then they're like, and then Jeff says, and a cold beer. And they're like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I wouldn't do it now. When I was 24 and I played Survivor, like, I definitely drank beer when I was out there. So, yeah, I don't know. Some people know how to party. That's all I can say.
I guess the other thing I've really noted over the years, and I just, let me show this off.
Hey, what do you have?
Here is my, this is, so I'm the type of Survivor fan that, like, buys things from Ethan's Instagram store.
Okay. All right, here, hold on. Yeah. So you have the three versions of Ethan. What is that? A postcard?
It is a postcard. He signed it to Jason old. I got the old school versus new school Survivor t-shirt. And he crossed out old and he wrote new school rules, Ethan, and he signed it. And it's the three versions of himself. He's been handsome for several decades now. And I thank him for that. He didn't need to do that. And it wasn't like a oh, this is a notable person buying. It was just a guy buying something on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's the kind of Survivor fan.
Do you have any other Survivor merch?
Well, I have a couple more postcards, and then I have like I bought a bunch of t-shirts over the years from Ethan's store.
So
like,
you're just big, this one I'm big Ethan stan.
I'm a big Ethan. Well, I think, to be fair, I think Ethan has the best merch right now. I've looked around, and I think Ethan has the best merch.
Okay. All right. Have you ever bought a cameo from a Survivor?
No, but I have shopped it for some friends that are big Survivor fans.
Yes. Okay. And who were you looking at?
I was looking at Tyson.
Tyson. Which yeah.
One? He's one of the greats. I think one of the funniest ever.
Yes. I listened to a podcast you did once, and you and Mallory Rubin talked about like your five favorite Survivors. I feel like you both have. I think she was a really big Tyson fan.
Yeah, she loves Tyson. Absolutely loves Tyson. I mean, he's just one of like the comebacks and the kind of like just the wit that he has to say certain things. Mm-hmm. I remember there's a great one. It might be from Winners at War when Tony, or now what season? Maybe it's not Winners at War. Was Tyson and Tony on a season before that? Anyway,
no.
Tyson says something like, "This is a person who is keeping us safe about Tony," and it was just like so funny to
me. Yeah, it's when Tony was like, climbing the ladder. Yeah.
Yeah, when he was climbing the ladder. And then when, you know, of course, the iconic conversation he has with Coach on Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah.
not wearing the feathers in your hair, I think is something I legitimately watch once a month.
Yes.
Because it is just, it crushes me every single time. It is so funny.
Have you ever bought a cameo from of any celebrity?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not celebrities. I bought a Tyler Hansbrough cameo. Tyler Hansbrough, former UNC standout, former Indiana Pacer, former NBA player with multiple concussions. I bought a cameo from him for a friend who's a huge Tar Heel fan. I bought people who have been on the internet in this past week might have seen a story about Tom Cruise deepfakes.
Yes, yes.
I bought a cameo from that Tom Cruise impersonator, who is very good.
Yes,
he's very, very good.
What did you have the cameo say?
Well, so the bit was, this was for NBA Desktop, the web show, the Emmy-winning web show that I did at The Ringer. And they had another show on that network, another web show called Slow News Day, hosted by Kevin Clark, who's an NFL writer. And Kevin Clark had just had like a run of really notable guests, like great guests, and I'm forgetting the names now. And so my bit was, I'm so mad at my crew because they can't get me any good guests, and we need to like up the game and we need to get people. And so we ended up getting Tom Cruise, but it was Tom Cruise from Cameo. Mm-hmm. And we ended up getting De Niro, but it was De Niro from Cameo. And I'll tell you what, that Tom Cruise impersonator is amazing, and you don't even need to put the deepfake thing on him because he legitimately just can make his face look like that.
Yeah.
Are you on Cameo, Rob? Can we get a deal?
I am. I look, Jason, most of the Survivors are.
I mean, like, I have almost been on Cameo several times. Mm-hmm. I may be on it anytime in the near future, and like, any way you can glean some opportunity and some bags from this experience you've had. Mm-hmm. I think like you're a great example of a person who's like created this wonderful career out of something that was really fun. This wonderful island adventure.
Out of nothing. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I want to ask you about how you got started. Cause I think it's an interesting story. Can you talk about how you first got discovered?
I mean, I was tweeting. That was it. Like, I'm one of these people that got my job off of social media. I was working as a cater waiter and like delivering packages for my friend's leather company in New York City. And I wasn't really sure what I was doing at that particular time in my life, but I love the Knicks. I love sports. And I was tweeting about it. Mm-hmm. I had begun my Twitter account basically to follow my fantasy basketball teams. Like, you know, this was like what internet like 2.0, and it was kind of difficult to get like daily injury reports and figure out who to start. So I would follow beat writers. And through that, I just started kind of firing off jokes. My Twitter account grew. I got some, there was some fortunate breaks there where like Linsanity popped off at that time. And yep. So I got a lot of heat off of that. And that went on for a while. And then I got the opportunity to write for a few places. I got the opportunity to write for Deadspin, for a now defunct website called The Classical. I guess Deadspin is defunct now as well. Mm-hmm. SB Nation. And then through that, I was approached to like freelance for Grantland. Did that. They eventually hired me. Grantland then folded, and I got hired at The Ringer, where I think many other people found the stuff that I do. So that was really, it was really kind of like lucky. I was not, it was writing and or podcasting or doing anything in front of a mic was not anything that I was thinking that I was going to do with my life. Mm-hmm. It just turned out that somehow I had this weird talent for it.
Yeah. And I really first became aware of you because of the Game of Thrones knowledge mm-hmm. that you possess. So were you a like Game of Thrones books guy before there was even a TV show? And then the TV show came on, and it's like, okay, finally, I have something to use all this knowledge for.
Oh yeah, big time! Like I love the books, love the books. And then when it when the news broke that there was a TV show, as obviously. Thrilled and a little anxious that they wouldn't get it right. And then it turned out to be great. And then it turned out to be like a really fun thing for my career. I think the thing that I tried to do with my Game of Thrones coverage is make it accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, as you may have experienced, you know, in this kind of like survivor subculture, you know, in like any kind of subculture, whether it be nerd subculture, sports, pop
right.
culture, whatever, there's always like two kinds of people. There's like the people who, just want to grow the thing and want to create conversations, want more people coming in. And then there's the people like who are at standing
the
on the walls
yeah.
of the thing, the gatekeepers who are like, you weren't here when we were, when it was hardcore, you're a casual, you're like, and so my thing has always been to try and lower the barriers as much as possible to make a thing like Game of Thrones as accessible to people as possible. So they wouldn't feel like, oh, is this question dumb if I ask this? Because that's mm-hmm. a thing that I think, you know, like I would go on the Song of Ice and Fire forums a lot before I was covering the show, before the show was a thing. And it could be brutal. Like if you were just like, hey, I noticed this thing that Ramsay Bolton did. And then people will be like, he didn't do that. He was riding a completely different kind of horse, you idiot. And then it would just like mm-hmm. this flame. And I just did not want to do that. I wanted to make it, if somebody had a question, any question, let's try and answer it.
Out of all the different fan bases that you cover, well, what do you think is like the most particular out of all that between Harry Potter, and Star Wars, and Marvel, and Game of Thrones? Like, you've experienced, and you're a wealth
That's
of
a
knowledge
good question.
In all of those.
It's a good question. I think A Song of Ice and Fire, just because it really was such a underground, it was, yes, of course, like, Feast for Crows was a number, like a New York Times bestseller, and Dance with Dragons was a New York Times bestseller, but it really wasn't a thing that people kind of like knew about. It wasn't Harry Potter. It wasn't that level of like cultural penetration. And so it was like the discourse was like pretty insular, and it was people like who had just pored over the text because of like famously George R. R. Martin, the author, has taken his time and is currently mm-hmm. Stuck on book 5, and we don't know when he will finish. So there, this kind of culture of theorizing had become like very strong around the fan base. And I think, in that sense, it would be the A Song of Ice and Fire fan base, because they become so particular, and because really knowing your stuff in order to extrapolate out and build these theories had become and is such an important way that those fans communicate. Unlike Harry Potter, which is finished, and unlike mm-hmm. Marvel, which is kind of which is like this wonderful balance of like hardcore longtime comics fans and like kids and the general movie going audience. So I really think it's A Song of Ice and Fire because it was such a subculture for such a long time.
So I asked some of our listeners to submit some questions for you. And I thought this was an interesting one. PJ Gagan, and the listeners were so excited that you were coming on. There's a big crossover of the RHAP listeners and people that are following.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Everything that you're doing. PJ Gagan has a question for you. Tell me if you've gotten this question before. Which ending was worse, Game of Thrones or Survivor: The Edge of Extinction? You know, both sort of end with a guy out of nowhere sort of coming in and then taking the thing.
Yeah, here's the thing about Edge is the ending was kind of compelling, and it actually did change the game. Saying, I will give up immunity and do fire became the standard by which people who come back now will be measured by. I think we saw that with Natalie when he was at war. The fact that she didn't do it. Was obviously a huge mark against her. Do I think she wins if she does it? Maybe. It's a much better chance that she wins if she does it than if she doesn't.
Well, especially if she knocks out Tony. If she knocks out Tony,
that's huge.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring Tony, and then she knocks out
head
Tony.
To head.
Yeah, and it's her and Sarah and Michelle. Like, yeah, I think she got a pretty good shot.
And I think that was like a fatal mistake. She had played balls out. Like hard, cutthroat, ruthless. I am stronger and faster and more athletic than everyone out here. For her whole time Edge, on what do they call it at the time? Was it also Edge of Extinction in Winter's War? Now I'm forgetting it.
On the Edge of Extinction, yeah, they called it that.
Yeah. So and to come back and then like pump the brakes and say, oh, I'm going to play conservative now and not do fire. A big mistake. That said, Edge of Extinction, it didn't bother me that much because it was such an incredible move. And I really feel like there was a lot of gameplay packed into that short amount of time when Chris came back. Now, Game of Thrones is unquestionably worse because the show was the most talked about, most popular show. Of its time.
Yes.
At its peak, it was just an absolute monster. Must watch TV. I would be upset when the episodes were over. And now we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, not hitting the landing, I would argue, in this age of interconnected IP with Marvel now expanding into television and Harry Potter looking to do television, I would argue that it actually cost them untold amounts of money because now it's like, yes, will people get excited for the prequels? I think so. But there isn't that built in excitement because people were so disappointed. And I think what that ending really did is I think it is a lesson for studios and for platforms that you have to nail the ending if you want to continue to go back to this material. I think if they had to do it again, they would have done it differently because we just don't talk about Game of Thrones now. We don't talk about it.
Jason, I have one of my co-hosts, Akiva, he said, this was a good point, that if you told somebody that you were rewatching Game of Thrones, they would look at you like you're crazy. And we just we're in the middle of a pandemic. People are watching every show ever made. Have you heard one person hey, I just started Game of Thrones. It's going great.
I mean, I've seen a few tweets from people I know who've been like, I've been thinking about it, or I thought about this episode. I thought, oh, wow, I was really thinking about the Arya and Tywin scene from season 2. You know, like, I've seen stuff like that. But yeah, it's like, you know where it's going. And the last season really is a disappointment, ending in a colossal disappointment in the finale. And this is, of course, listen, it's subjective. If you enjoyed that finale, go with God. Congratulations. I'm really happy for you. It's like, it's just fallen off the map from something that was absolutely culturally the water cooler thing to, we don't talk about it. We do not discuss it. It's insane that happened.
Yeah.
It's wild. And so, like, I really think if HBO had the chance to do it over again, they would, I don't have the inside info on why it was cut short that way. You know, maybe Benioff and Weiss just were done and they wanted to go back, or they didn't want to sign people to new contracts or whatever it was, or like they were just like, you know, let's just finish this thing now. I don't know what the reasons were.
Yeah.
But I think what you would just say if you were HBO is like, okay, whatever it costs to land it in, I don't know how many episodes we need. Do we need 5 extra episodes and what actually happened? Okay, let's do that. Whatever it takes to do that, let's do it, because we want to continue to explore this world, this IP in the future. And if we don't land this, we will kill the golden goose. And I think, I'm not saying they killed it, but I'm saying it is ill. The goose is not well.
Yes. Can I pitch an idea to save Game of Thrones,
please,
to bring it back?
Please.
Okay.
Please.
All right. I'm going to throw out, Peter Dinklage and Emilia Clarke start Game of Thrones office ladies type rewatch podcast.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea.
Who would be the two? Yeah. Who would be the two that give me the realistic option of the people that maybe don't have that much going on but would be a name.
The Dink's not going to do it. And the other thing is, like, you know, I've been watching a lot of BBC crime dramas, mm-hmm. like Broadchurch and stuff. And the thing you notice from that is that everybody who is in any Harry Potter or in any Game of Thrones is also in every BBC crime drama. So, like, actually, I think a lot of people from it are working. It would probably be, because the actor who played Tommen was just in 1917.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't, it would have to be somebody notable enough. Hot Pie?
Hot Pie, yeah.
So Hot Pie could be one, and then,
What about Gendry?
Gendry is good. I feel like he is probably working as well. He's a little too young. Maybe,
All right, we could just let it be out there. Let
Hot
somebody
Pie,
have it.
I think, is a, Hot Pie is a great one, because Hot Pie has that great moment with the wolf.
Yeah.
And you get to see him upgrade his bread making skills, and so you understand that he is part of this world and he is right there. And then I think, you know what? There's a guy from the last season documentary that's on HBO Max, mm-hmm. you can see it right now, and I forget his name, but he's an Irish gentleman, and he's always been in the Stark army, is a red-haired, red-bearded mm-hmm. Irish gentleman who's in every battle scene.
Yeah.
Him and Hot Pie. That's what I would do.
Okay. I'm just saying, I think they could work.
Oh, the Night King.
Think about it.
The Night King is another one.
Yeah.
Let's hear his voice, because he was really out there for a little while, like dropping spoilers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he may not have that much going on. Let's get him out there.
Okay. Daniel Schmidt said,
yeah.
Jason does a number of impressions across the binge mode seasons. Do you have any Survivor impressions?
Oh, I have kind of like a mild Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Good. All right. Coming to good. That's it. That's when he's like letting people in challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Just when he says Survivor. That.
Yeah.
From the intro. And then the thing he's been doing, this is not an impression, but it's just like a thing I've noticed at the end of some of the most recent seasons, where he's like giving this really weird call for like this, like, hey, are you 14, 15, 16, and you've got like some, your parents are super cool and they will let you be on an island,
yeah.
like away from everybody for like months and months and months. Send us a tape. We can't wait to see it.
It is odd that, yeah, he seems to be really fixated. And I noticed that because I'm watching a lot of the seasons, because I'm doing this all-time 40 season countdown.
I
get to the finale of these, and he's like, all right, kids, this is the night that you've been waiting for. Parents, let your kids stay up late. Kids, thank you for watching us. I don't know who he's talking to. They love to show kids in the audience. Like, all right, little girl, write a vote.
That's another thing. Here's my, this is, and listen, I think Jeff, first ballot Hall of Fame, like TV presenter,
no doubt.
Host. I think he's one of the greatest ever, ever, ever. I am consistently in awe of his ability to like roll with moments at tribal, everything. He's great. Can we get him a clipboard when he goes into the audience for the finale and has like a child right on his back? like, take, all right, take this, take the piece of paper and then you just put it on my back and then write. It's like, get, can we get a clipboard? What are we doing? Is she's writing on your back?
Yeah.
Using your back as a clipboard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my one note. Otherwise, stellar, like 10 out of 10 for Jeff Probst.
Do you have any ideas for themes for Survivor?
Oh, wow. Yes. First offs.
Yeah.
Like everybody, I think it's been, we've got 40 seasons now. Everybody who's ever been voted off first.
Yeah.
Like, let's get it and let's see if you're, you know, Francesca is a great one who I felt like there was something there.
Yeah.
Notably voted off first twice. Was clearly had a very strategic mind, but we just didn't get to see anything of it because of these weird run-ins and basically the breaks of the game. But I think that there's some fun there. Now, you would get a lot of, there'd be a lot of, like, Drek, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be fun to get, like, first offs, like, first and second offs.
Mm-hmm.
People who just...
Oh, you'd include the second votes, too.
Yeah, let's get to first versus seconds or something
first
like that.
First versus second. So somebody on, like, the one tribe is going to be, you'll be the first person off again.
Yeah. Yes.
And
runners up is, it, I mean, they've done various variations of, like, that kind of thing, runners up. But I think a runners up kind of thing would be fun. And then what about just, like, a straight audience vote on who should come back? Non-winners. Who you'd like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then, listen, we did Gen X versus Millennials.
Yeah.
I think it's getting time. Clearly, Jeff wants to go young. Millennials versus Gen Z.
Yeah.
It's right there. I think they will do that one. I think they will do that one.
Yeah. It'll be wild. I feel like that would be a wild one of like really like exploit that. Do you think that Gen Z would tune in for that?
I think Jeff is hope. Listen, Jeff has been, as we just noted, Jeff has been doing the work, making sure that Gen Z is watching the show. I think Gen Z would tune out for that. I think that Survivor, I'm consistently amazed at just like the depth and the breadth of the fan base and the amount of people that want to be on the show. I absolutely think Gen Z would tune out for that. It's very interesting. Like I read a lot into the things that Jeff talks about on
yes.
those like reunion shows. He loves to call out the good looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
The good looking guy must really fire some demo for Survivor because he's always like, Malcolm, one of our favorites. Love to have you back. We got so many letters about Malcolm. Or Joe is another one.
I think it's maybe that Jeff has like maybe friends that are like, hey, can you set me up with blank?
Now, does that happen? Let me ask you this, because one thing I've noticed, and I think if you're a Survivor fan, you can't help but notice. There's a lot of relationships within the Survivor community, and
yes.
it's often people who were not on seasons with each other. So how does that happen? Is Jeff acting as matchmaker?
No, it's not Jeff. I think it's just that the idea is like, hey, like, you know, my fame is at like a 3 out of 10.
Right.
Yours is at a 4 out of 10. But if we put it together, like we're at a 5. Like, I think that that's just the idea. And I don't know if it's in all these cases, like it's that calculated, but it's sort of like, hey, like I'm not that big a deal. You're not that big a deal. But hey, as a couple, maybe like people pay like a little bit more attention to what we're doing.
Another question, if I could ask you another question.
Yes.
So I think one of the things I've been really fascinated by, again, in recent seasons, and I think Winners at War really explored this a lot, because everyone there, champion, multiple, you know, many have been on multiple seasons. The gameplay was like just at a high level
mm-hmm.
in terms of everything that everybody wanted to do. And everyone was very open about the effect Survivor had on them when they would try to go back in the world and how hard it was to like, is everybody lying to me? Did you experience that? Like, what was it like to come back from the island?
So in my first season that I definitely felt like the physical effects from Survivor, like I couldn't like stay awake past like 6:30 at night. Like it was just like, you know, it really is like a traumatic experience on you physically. I didn't get like any sort of like the like emotional like squirreliness or anything like that of like, you know, I've heard stories like people like are like hiding food in their bedrooms and like they can't like Jason, I went to the final tribe. I got voted out of the game like on a Thursday and I was mm-hmm. back at my desk in Garden City at work on Monday. And people were like, what happened to you? I'm like, oh, I've been sick. Like, I lost like, yeah, like 30 pounds from like when I left 5 weeks ago. So yeah, I was back at work. Like, I'm not going to get paid I don't go back to work.
I used to go to school in Garden City.
Yeah.
Waldorf Academy out there. What you have just outlined is another reason why I don't think I could do it. Like, when I hear people be like, I had parasites for like 3 weeks, it's like, I'm out. Did you have parasites,
Rob? I didn't have any parasites. Okay, I had a bruised ego, and that was the extent of it. But I'm telling you, if you wanted to do it, I think that they would take a look at you.
I think that that's true. I just feel like, listen, I'm not like about to fall keel over and die. I'm a reasonably healthy and fit individual. I also just watch it. I'm like,
you have nothing
like
to gain
wrestling
there.
In the mud. Yeah. Yeah, what am
for
I
what
and,
purpose?
Like, for what? Am I going to drown? Here's another impression I do.
Yes.
Because I'm always joking with my girlfriend that I would legitimately die during a physical challenge. So I'll do Jeff talking about the fact that I have died. It was like, and Jason is face down in the waves, and his body is washing out to sea. That would be Jeff.
Yes.
During a challenge, as my body was floating out.
Yes. Yes. It would be a sad moment. You would get a card. Yeah.
That's true. Hopefully they get medical in time.
Yeah, I would think.
Medical!
Yeah. Well, they came very close. Did you watch Survivor Ko Rong? That was right. But have you watched that one?
Yes, I have watched that one. Yes.
Well, yeah, it was scary. They almost lost somebody.
That was actually terrifying. That was like one of the most terrifying moments I think I've seen on Survivor. I think the other one would be an episode that I just recently watched of Cameron with Brett Hance, Russell's nephew. Brandon Hance, who I'm hoping is fine, and it was clearly going through some stuff.
He was going through some stuff.
He was on the island.
Yeah, he seems better. He seems better.
Yeah, he seems better, and I hope that he's better, because clearly that was like I've never seen a moment where Jeff is just like, why don't you come over here?
Mm-hmm.
Come over here and stand by me, and I'm just going to rub your shoulders until you calm down.
Yes. Now, are you a Russell should have won person?
No. No. I think Russell is like a great... He's like a great offensive player in the NBA, you know, who just is like score, 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 score. There's other parts of the game. Like, I'm sorry, jury management is part of the game.
Yeah.
The social aspects are, in my opinion, the most important part of the game. How do you kill somebody and then have them either respect your gameplay enough that they will vote for you, or how do you kill them in a way that they don't hate you and don't want to take it out on you when you go to jury? And I think that that's part of it. And I think that I'm not sitting here saying what Russell did was illegitimate. I just think that he had a quite obvious hole in his game. And when that obvious hole was revealed, as it was quite clearly, he should have tried something else. You know, you've got to change a little bit. And he just never did. He just kind of like always tripled down on this kind of thing, which is, I am ruthless. I'm the villain. I don't care. I'll do anything to get ahead. I'll lie to your face, blah, 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 blah. And once that card is revealed, if you don't have anything else, it's just going to be tough. So I respect Russell's gameplay, but I absolutely agree with the results in his finals. What about you? I'd love to know how you feel about it.
You know, that's sort of like a good like litmus test, not to like be like a gatekeeper in the community. But I feel like that if somebody is like coming at you like aggressively about like, oh, Russell, he should have won. Russell should have won, his season. He played the best game. That's usually a sign like they're sort of like not that deep into the Survivor fandom. Sort of like just that's like a, you know, an easy one to sort of like sort people out.
Yeah, there's been several great players like that over the years. Ozzy, who I think you could argue should have won in his first season, is one who's like obviously a physical phenomenon, swims like a fish. His main strategy is going to be, I'm going to crush it at camp because you're going to starve if I leave. Okay, but what else? Like, I think that got revealed as he came back, there have been players like that throughout the years who are just like, you need to have another thing. Joe, Malcolm, there's a couple of other ones where it's like, okay, what else you got? You got to show something else.
Mm-hmm. This is a question from Jake Janikowski, who says, if the entire NBA played a massive game of Survivor, I don't know how you're doing a hundreds of person NBA Survivor game.
Yeah.
Who is the winner?
Oh, gosh. Wow. Well, let's say let's just go with like the top, like let's say 15 players in the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think of those, I think it would be LeBron, because I think he does play.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's got all the physical aspects, right? But the fact that he has been in front of the public eye since he was like 16 years old, and he has managed that, and he has gotten it to the point now where nobody in the NBA, or you might even argue all of American sports, nobody plays the metagame of the kind of like sports media ecosystem and the conversations derived from there. Nobody mm-hmm. plays that as effectively as LeBron in terms of like being able to amplify his message and get his message out there when he wants to and say things about other people and leverage access for favors or certain things. Nobody else plays that game better. And he's been doing it again since he was 16 at a high, high, high level, like on a national stage. And so I think it would be LeBron, as boring as that answer is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I do think that he's almost like coming in with like sort of like the cachet that like Boston Rob on like his fifth time coming in, where like right. There's a lot of reverence to him. And then that he probably like has like a little bit more gas in the tank.
Yeah, but I think he's even more strategic than Rob. Like, you know, like the, you know, his relationship with the management company Clutch
Jason,
Sports and what
up.
Exactly. Smarten up, Jason. Hey, you know. I mean, Rob is, listen, I think Rob is a titanic player. And I think he's
sure.
And obviously an icon of Survivor. I also think that, like, is kind of emblematic of the old school style that just does not work anymore, which mm-hmm. is like, I'm going to dominate. I'm in control.
Yeah.
Nobody goes anywhere.
Well,
buddy system.
To make the comparison between Survivor and basketball, he's sort of like, you know, like a player like from the 90s that's like playing right. like a lot of defense that's out there. Right. And the game is just like, you know, fast, 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 score, score, score.
Could you play today? Could you play with the way it's played
See,
today?
See, I think I could. I think that maybe, not to be like have a big ego about it, but
I love it.
Like, I feel like the way that I was looking at it is probably closer to the way that the game ended up going with sort of like,
I agree with that.
Working with everybody. Like, I'm not saying like I would be like, if I got out there, I would win. Probably because of the podcast, I'd get voted out first. But if this was like, right. A different world where, you know, different timeline where maybe like people weren't like, oh, he knows everybody, so vote him out first. I think that the type of way that I would play has, you know, sort of like gone in that trajectory of where the game went.
Here's another, I guess they've kind of did this with healers and hustlers and
yeah.
heroes, but like, I think an all medical.
Mm-hmm.
In the wake of COVID, nurses, doctors, yep. etc. I think that would be a really cool game that they could do. That'd
so everybody really works in medical.
Everybody works in medical.
Mm.
So if somebody gets, you know, if we have like a situation where somebody gets like something infected or somebody yeah. gets heat stroke or whatever, we can call medical, but also we've got it under control.
Yeah.
We've got a Parvati slicing her thumbnail thing again. Listen, we got like five people on it. We're good.
Who's number one on your list for the person that you want to see them bring back?
I mean, it'll never happen, but Ceree.
Ceree. Oh, no, I think Ceree definitely wants to come back.
You think she... It felt like her send-off was so final, but I just feel like best to never win it.
Mm-hmm.
And never won it... Listen, obviously, like, there's a lot of luck involved in every single win. But I think she's had some really notable bad luck moments
yes.
against her.
Whether yes.
it's like,
I mean, she had three of them.
Thing.
Where,
yeah, like,
yeah.
Three, yes.
Yeah.
And obviously has engineered some of the most jaw-dropping moments in Survivor history. You know, the Eric immunity thing, that's her. She is the one who's like, let me, here's a crazy idea. What if we just get him to give it to you? And then still a moment that I return to as that is just jaw dropping in terms of like what the game can offer for entertainment. And so she would be tops on my list. I think she's fantastic. Rick from Davids. Edge.
Sure.
I would be shocked if he didn't come back at some point.
You would think so.
Yeah, right. He was so good. He played it so well. Played from the bottom often, but also I the kind of player I like is they never go negative. Things are going against them, but they're handling it with a smile on their face or with some kind of a plume. Like Denise was like that too. So, Ceree and I think and Demons would be my two tops. I'd love to see. Michaela is another one who I feel like if Michaela has that like Natalie, I can be the best athlete that ever played Survivor kind of gene. Like I would, if she just figures like the social aspect out, I'd like to see her back.
Mm-hmm.
Those will be my three.
Okay. Can I ask you a genre question?
Sure.
Can I ask you a Star Wars question?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is a treat for me. Do you think that Baby Yoda is going to die? Because the Baby Yoda does not have a role in the sequel trilogy, and I fear that something bad has happened to Baby Yoda.
Do I think Baby Yoda is going to die? I think it's it's a big, big galaxy. So Baby Yoda not being in the latest trilogy sequels doesn't necessarily mean that Baby Yoda is not out there. I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
Even though clearly those movies Even though those movies were clearly created without a foreknowledge of the existence of Baby Yoda and Grogu, I'm going to say no simply because, man, the amount of money that has fallen out of that kid in terms of like merchandising, in terms of just like driving people to Disney Plus, he is a money-making machine. People love him. Let's be 100%. I watched a lot of those Mandalorian episodes just because of him.
Mm-hmm.
Now it seems like he's gone from the show for we'll see what happens in the next season. But I would be surprised if they killed him anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And even if they did kill him, as we've seen with these the various Star Wars properties in the animated offerings, whether it be Clone Wars, Rebels, etc. Just because someone dies doesn't mean you can't explore other parts of their story. They can backfill in years when we weren't in touch with Grogu. So even if he should pass, which would be sad and devastating for all of us. God forbid that happens. We'll still get more Grogu stories. Grogu will be with us forever, like the Force.
Survivor has cast some notable athletes on the show. Recently, I watched Jimmy Johnson come back, the late great Cliff Robinson, Jeff Kent.
R.I.P.
Is there a modern athlete that you feel like needs to go and explore Survivor?
Oh, wow, that's a great one. First, let me just say that I began to really worry about the health of MLB when Jeff Kent, who was a notable member of famous Giants teams, like an all-star, was recognized by like one person. This guy was like, his face was on SportsCenter, is on the cover of like Sports Illustrated. Like Jeff Kent was a recognizable figure. Oh,
John Rocker too. Yeah.
John Rocker. It's like
only one person knew him also. Right.
Yeah. So I was really concerned about the health of baseball and that, but even Rocker was infamous. Yes.
Yes.
But Kent, like, they were a relevant, not just because of Barry Bonds' like home run chase, but because like they were in the co-MVP. They were in the mix. Like, he is a famous freaking athlete, and one person sort of recognized him.
Yeah.
That was troubling. Let's see. Current athlete who I think would be great on Survivor. Here's one. Tiger Woods. Now, Tiger, get healthy soon. Yes. I hope that he's fine. But so Tiger, like, if I don't know if you read that, there's like an ESPN magazine profile of Tiger that came out of within the last couple of years.
Yeah.
That talked about like his love for like spec ops training. Like he would go in these like shoot houses with like Navy SEALs and like do all this kind of stuff. I think the kind of focus that he needs, I think he'd be good at it.
Yeah.
Probably too famous.
Get that the would spy big, shack going. Yeah.
Oh, I think the spy shack would be tough. The thing is, I guess the thing about like when you look at the athletes,
could you imagine that and then hi everybody, I'm Tiger.
He's just I guess that's the thing, is he's way too famous. I think he, like, obviously many athletes would be built for it, but the question is, now that I'm thinking about it, is who is just famous and who is good and dedicated and a ruthless athlete, but also is not quite famous enough that people would recognize them immediately. Mm-hmm. Clifford Robinson, I was shocked, because it's like the guy is 6'9".
Yeah.
Wu knew who he was, but like nobody else. So I that's a good question. Let me think of Ben Wallace. Is he too big? Chauncey Billups?
Mm-hmm.
He's retired, and maybe people wouldn't quite know who he is. Yeah. And he's also like Allen Iverson.
You know, it's the kind of thing where it's like, if somebody just happens to be a fan of the show and wants to do it, it's like, they're never not going to say, you're too famous to be here. Like,
how about this? All famous super fans, Tyler Perry, Sia, and whoever else the other famous super fans are.
Sure.
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah. Could be good.
I mean, we could do that on the back end of like the second season of a two season a year after a new cast, like throw some super famous people out there.
Jason, I thought there must be something that you really want to know about Survivor that you haven't asked me.
What is the ultimate rumor in Survivor, like, in the Survivor community? What are some of like the fun gossipy rumors that's the stuff I love?
Well, like, are we talking about like production, or are we talking about who's with who? Like,
sure. No, we don't have to do who's with who. We don't have to blow up anybody's spotlight.
This person
slept
with this person's wife. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We don't need that. But production messed this up and Jeff blew up and that's why this is like this, or, you know, the famous, the inference that Ben only won his year because of straight out manipulation, which I don't believe, but is out there and is a thing that people have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Like, what is it, like a famous like production?
So do you know? So it's Survivor Africa. Yes. Do you know about like the final, like they had like the final four challenge where they used to give them like a notepad and then write down the answer. And there was one of the questions where they asked them, do you know this story?
I don't know the story.
So there was one of the questions where they asked, like, and I forget if it was like, who has a tattoo or who doesn't have their ears pierced. I don't remember the exact thing. And
I think I've heard this one.
Yeah.
And they got it right.
They got it right. Lex got it right. And they said, okay, no, that's all right. You didn't get it right. And then after the season was over, they're like, we blew it on that. You know, and they had to like sort of like try to like make good with Lex of, you know, and they wanted to, I think they gave him like, they made him like, he basically got tied with like Kim Johnson for prize money for him. Maybe Big Tom also.
Oh, that's nice.
Because I think Big Tom got voted out at that spot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Has there ever been anybody who was just like, I got screwed?
Oh, every single person that ever played the show. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But to the point where they're like, I want to talk to Jeff Probst's manager. I want to talk to production. They effed me here.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like I don't think things like get to that level. But I mean, so many players, a quarter of the players that probably lose are like, it was rigged, so I lost. And then, you know, like, You never hear anybody saying it's rigged so they win, but you know the losers are always like, oh no, that was BS, that they wanted this to happen, so that's why I got that's why it was this challenge this day.
Who is obviously ingratiating? I'm not saying ingratiating yourself, that sounds so like sycophantic, but obviously like having a good relationship with production is quite clearly a benefit, whether it be in the edit or being able to sneak away to do stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who do production hate? And why does production end up hate? Like, what are the reasons that production would hate someone?
Yeah, I think that you come out there and that I think if you're willing to, like, play ball with the production of, like, sort of like, you know, and especially, like, when my first season, I went out there and, like, you know, you're just, like, giving the producer stuff and they're loving it. And it's like, you know, it's sort of like being like a dog, and it's like, this is great. Give us more gold. You're doing it. But the people they don't like are the people that they're like, all right, you know, stand over there. Like, why do I have to do it? Like, all right, Jason, can we get you for an interview? No, I don't feel like it. So it's sort of like the people that are going along with the, you know, production, making their lives easy. Those are the people they like. And I think that the people that are sort of like being sort of like difficult the whole time, the people that they don't like.
Interesting. And so, like, when you say play ball, does that mean like, oh, if you find the idol but they didn't catch it, you'd like pull it out again? Do they ever do stuff like that?
No. So again, you know, I don't know from the idols or anything like that, but I think that for the most part, like just being like difficult in terms of like if they tell you to do something and you're giving them a hard time of like you know, you don't want to do the interview, you don't want to move out of the way if they're like trying to get a shot or something like that. If you're being somebody who's difficult. Jason, I want to be respectful of your time, but I also want to give you the opportunity to, like, you know, talk about any other things that you want to get into.
Just a couple more, because this is honestly, it is so fascinating to me. To the best of your knowledge,
yes,
has anybody ever made love on the island?
No, no way.
That's right. That's what I say. Now, people have argued this with me and they're like, come on, look at the way they were making out of it. I'm like, it just doesn't feel like number one privacy impossible.
Yeah.
Like,
let me answer this.
Amanda and Ozzy, or, you know, Boston Robin Amber.
Yeah. Again, Boston Robin Amber, a married couple. We're on the edge of extinction 25 days together. I don't even think it came up. Now, again, they're married for like 14 years.
Maybe their first season, though. Their first season, were like, they were in the car and they were on the boat for a little while.
Don't think so.
I still think no. People have argued this with me.
Probably
I'm like,
a better chance when they first met that it would have happened than after being married 14 years. But I do think I still say no.
I just think privacy and hygiene and all of those things make it a no. Right.
Yeah, no way. No way. No. I would say that I've never heard a story. Two survivors, interlude, but they give you condoms though.
Whoa!
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know, like, what they're worried about of, like, hey, like, it just...
just in
like,
case,
I guess. Well, I don't know if it's like that, I guess I always thought production's like, hey, it'll never happen. But if it did, like, it can't be because they're like, hey, do we have protection? Like, oh, we would have done it. We didn't have any contraception here be the reason why it didn't happen.
Well, I've always wanted to know that. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And listen, if you ever need a guest, hit me up.
Oh,
so I love the podcast. Absolutely. I love everything you do.
Yeah. This was so great.
Have me back.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what you have coming up?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. So we've got a podcast called Take Line that I'm co-hosting with two-time WNBA champion and now Atlanta Dream co-owner Renee Montgomery. We're going to talk about sports. We're going to talk about games, but also we're going to explore, you know, the intersections of sports and politics and racial justice and social justice and things like that. And then my video series, All Caps NBA, which is going to be like a humorous look at NBA discourse through the lens of the internet. And then we've got some other things in the pipeline that I can't wait to talk about.
Okay.
Please like and subscribe.
Yes. Yes. Check it out. Of course, Take Line. I listened to the trailer. Dropped it today. Is that going to be weekly?
Yes. Yes. Weekly show.
Yeah. Okay.
March 16th, first episode. Again, please like and subscribe. Give us those 5-star ratings immediately.
Yeah.
Well, I will send you to the edge of extinction.
Yes. Well, this was such a treat to get to talk to you again.
Same here.
I've listened to you for many years, and I'm just like in awe of like just like the seemingly effortless recall that you have on things.
That's
where
not true.
You know, you're and the way that you're able to like pull from this piece of pop culture media and apply it to this other pop culture media. Can I ask you one other question? Did you
absolutely.
Did you go to school for film study that you're just like it's so interesting whenever you talk about like just the like do some sort of like a dissection of talking about a movie or a TV show or a book?
No, I never did, but I read a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I always have. I went to school for music, and I think a lot of, honestly, my curiosity comes from the fact that, like, in the years after music school, I was always like, man, I wish I had taken a college course on this. I wish I had, like, a more formal, like, actual, like, education in, like, this kind of stuff. And so I end up reading, you know, a lot of criticism, a lot of theory, stuff like that. And I get a lot of joy, and I get a lot of insight out of it.
Okay. Well, this was so fun. Follow Network on one of the great Twitter followers, Network with
Thank
an
you.
E
I appreciate it.
Instead of an O. What's the backstory on that? It was just that you were.
That's my Xbox Live gamer tag.
Ah, okay. That's great. Jason, this was just really, really fun, and thank you so much. And you know, best of luck in your new ventures over at Crooked Media.
Listen, when this is all over, let me buy you lunch somewhere here in LA, and I will just like mine you for Survivor gossip.
Thank you for having me on.
It's been a dream come true.
I'll go back and see if I can find out any more of those scandals to report back to you.
Yeah, all right. I love it.
Jason, thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.